This is WGNS Action Line, talking with Rutherford County newsmakers about what matters most to you. Now, your host, Scott Walker.
In studio, we have the executive director of Oakland's Mansion with us, James Manning, and also Jody Johnson. So what all is happening at Oakland's Mansion this time of year?
Oh, we've got so many cool things coming up. We are 1 month away from Oktoberfest, which is our 10th annual craft beer celebration at Oakland's, and that's what we are focused on primarily right now, but we've got a lot of other cool stuff coming up, and Jody is working on an inaugural fall craft fair before Oktoberfest, so it isn't our first one coming up after all. So I want her to tell you some about that.
All of that together.
There's plenty of other things going on at Oakland's. Night tours coming up in October and all kinds of wonderful things to do. Where do you want to fall in?
What kind of crafts are going to be there?
We have a big variety of crafts that'll be coming. We have about 50 artisans and vendors that'll be there. And we'll also have a community outreach area that'll have some people, different places from around the community, like Friends of Limebaugh and Discovery Center, Earth Experience. There will be one called Give a Little Christmas will be there, reaching 6,000 children that they've helped give a Christmas to this year. And so if anybody wants to come out and bring a toy to donate, or if they want to explore those areas and see other things to do around town, as well as we'll have lots of artisans and fine artisans and crafts that'll be all over the place.
To get tickets, how do you go about doing that?
The craft fair does not need tickets. You just show up to that.
Just up for that one, and then the beer fest. What do you do to get tickets for that one?
So go to oaklandsmansion.org, and at the very top, you're going to see if you're on a mobile device, you'll have a hamburger menu. Otherwise, if you're on a desktop, you're going to see news and events, and you just pull down, and we have all of our events arranged by the month. So it's very quick and easy to just go find the month and see what events are coming up for the rest of the year. Oktoberfest is on Saturday, September 28th, and there's a big green button right there where you can purchase your admission, and that's where our sponsors and our vendors have all registered. We've got 19 craft brewers and breweries that are going to be coming this year, and 4 food trucks. It's only $50 for admission, $20 for designated drivers. Drinkers get a souvenir tasting glass, and it is glass, not plastic, and it's got all of the names of our sponsors are on the tasting glass. We're also printing souvenir t-shirts this year that you can purchase, but your $50 gets you admission in and then unlimited tastings to all of our beer vendors, so you don't have to pay anything else while you're on site unless you want to buy something from the food trucks. And we do sell this event out every year, so you should go ahead and get your tickets now. They're going fast.
And then also the nighttime tours of Oakland's Mansion, that always sounds interesting because, I don't know, it seems a little spooky, kind of scary to do the nighttime tour, but tell us about that.
Well, it's really inclusive and unique because you get to experience being inside the house, which is completely different than being in it in the daytime. Connor Moss is our special events representative, and he's been with Oakland's for a long time, and he leads these tours, and he's going to tell you some of the creepy things that we have experienced in the house, but it's not a ghost tour. No. It is during the month of mourning when the mansion is dressed in Victorian mourning, and we're going to discuss the traditional death and dying beliefs and experiences and how different they were than they are today. So it's an educational experience, but it's also a fun one. We are going to have light refreshments and hors d'oeuvres that Jody's going to make on the sun porch on the back of the mansion, and then guests will be able to go out into the herb garden and enjoy the refreshments, and it's only $30. So we're doing 3 groups of 20 individuals, so it's very low price. You're very one-on-one with our staff, and you're getting a very unique experience in the mansion after hours. So we're not charging a lot of money for this. We're not going to make a lot of money from it. We just want people to be able to have this experience.
At Oakland's Mansion, there is a lot of history that dates back a lot of years, and it's really a fascinating history when you look back at it and you look at the different families that have owned it, because you're talking about really some of the first, millionaires in Murfreesboro?
First millionaires in the county were the Darrow family, and they moved here from Memphis to buy Oakland's. Yes, they were the second owners.
And so their million way back then, I mean, today's calculation, that'd be what?
$37 million.
$37 million. So they would be worth quite a bit back then.
Absolutely, yes.
And even, the first automobile? What family had that in Rutherford County? Was it one of the Oaklands?
That was the Darrows, yeah.
It's the Darrows, okay. And they were originally from Memphis or somewhere in West Tennessee?
Yeah, they had plantation money from Memphis, and they bought Oaklands because of its Civil War significance. And then they reconfigured the front porch and made a portico chair to park their car in front of it. Then after they sold Oaklands, They moved to East Main Street and built the Darrow Mansion that stands there today on the corner of Highland and Main.
Have you done a lot of research on whatever became of that family, where they are today, what happened next?
Absolutely. You can buy the books in our gift shop from Tennessee to Oz. And that's a good point to point. We just added our online gift shop to our website. Now, that book is not on there yet, but we are adding books daily. So you can go to our website, go to store. You can find Jody's new coloring book, which she just created from photographs that all of our staff members took at Oakland's. And Jody created the art. We had it printed at MTSU, and it is phenomenal. And it's only $10, which is a complete steal.
What was life like when that family first moved here?
When the Mannies first moved here?
Yeah, starting with the Mannies and then the Darrow family.
Well, the Mannies, Colonel Hardy Murphy is a man Murphy was named for when he died. His daughter Sally and her husband James Manny, living in Murfreesboro, North Carolina, inherited 274 acres of land that they moved here on to develop the plantation with enslaved people that they inherited. And they bought land continually. So they had nearly 1,500 acres, although not contiguous. One 778-acre tract is the largest one that was Oakland's was on as a contiguous piece. But yeah, the property was large, and they developed it from building the house and the plantation from approximately 1815 until, you know, the Civil War just wiped them out financially. And then they struggled to maintain until they sold to the Darrow family.
And then speaking of the Manny family, I know there's been a lot of work done at Evergreen Cemetery and whatnot. And I believe some of those who were slaves there so many years ago, they were buried at Evergreen, weren't they?
Yes, they were buried there on the plantation. And then Dr. Manny sold the land surrounding that burial ground to Evergreen, to the city rather, in 1872 and 1873. It was going to be Oakland Cemetery initially, but the name was changed in 1873 when it was opened as Evergreen Cemetery. And so you find graves there earlier, in addition to the enslaved in Section M. You found other graves there that are earlier for individuals that were moved there. And quite remarkably, just last week, a roofer at Oakland's found an inscription in the brick upstairs. We had never known that it was there. At least I had never known it was there. If anyone else knew about it, they can tell us. But that's news to me. We had always assumed that the front of the mansion was built in 1858 because Sally Manny died in 1857. And Dr. Manny gave the plantation to his son, Lewis, and daughter Adeline. But inscribed in the brick upstairs, just above the roof line on the corner of the projecting central tower, is inscribed John F. Arnold. Something is written in cursive above it that we can't read yet. Rutherford County Archaeological Society is going to bring some technology to help us read that without further damaging that brick. But it has 1858 inscribed in it. Interestingly, I knew as soon as I looked up John Felix Arnold and saw his headstone in Evergreen Cemetery, I recognized it because I'd seen it years ago. He and his brother were both killed in battle in the Civil War, and they were buried together sharing a headstone at Evergreen Cemetery. And I knew of his grave, but I didn't know that he was involved in the construction of Oakland's. He was a brick mason, as was his brother, and they are the sons. Actually, John is the adopted son of Captain Edwin A. Arnold. John Felix was born in 1837 and was killed near Peachtree Creek, Georgia on July 19th, 1864. And then later moved, his remains moved along with his brother to Evergreen Cemetery. His brother William was also a brick mason, and he was just discharged after the Battle of Shiloh due to being under the age of 18. He re-enlisted later and died near Atlanta, Georgia, 6 days before his brother, July 13th, 1864, and then, of course, buried there in Evergreen as well. And I also wanted to mention, when we're talking about Evergreen, the enslavement, the early memorial. You know, we recently partnered with African American Heritage Society to build a memorial to all those buried in Section M without a tombstone, without a headstone, including the enslaved for whom we believe that cemetery was first established. There in Section M, near the center of it, there is a rusty tin obelisk. The F0 tornado that came through recently toppled it, unfortunately. So that's going to force us to do something about it, I think. I talked to Mary Watkins yesterday. She's the immediate past president of the African American Heritage Society, and she had just spoken with Betty Brewer at Evergreen Cemetery, and so they are working together to ensure that it's preserved and interpreted in the best way that we can. We've always worried about it because it's rusty, it's outdoors, it's unprotected, and it's deteriorating. It's on a cut limestone base that looks very similar to the limestone that the mansion, the foundation of the mansion is built from. And we don't know from where that was quarried. We would love to know that. So it's always an opportunity to talk about this memorial and to tell folks that it's an unknown. But you can go to our website, and at the top under slavery, if you fall, click on Evergreen Cemetery, and you just scroll down. First, you'll see a map of Evergreen. Then next, you're going to see the GPR, the ground penetrating radar results from MTSU Geosciences that shows us where the likely remains are near this intersection M. And then after that is a photograph of Mary Watkins standing there beside the memorial that we're speaking of before it was blown down. And it has the word carry, C-A-R-R-I-E, written at the base. And then there's lots of handwritten inscription above it that we just can't read anymore. So you can learn more about Evergreen right there, and we'll continue to upload information to that page when there's news about Section M or anything significant, or you can reach out to us anytime.
Are you ever surprised when you stumble upon things like, for example, the brick that was inscribed? Are you surprised by these new finds?
Well, I was shocked and felt stupid because I've stood in front of it many times. It's about mid-thigh or calf, I guess. So I hadn't been on my knees crawling and checking the flashing like the roofer was when he found it, but it's near the beehive upstairs that we go out and look at all the time. There have been bees living in the second floor window hood just above that for over 20 years. And so I've been right in front of it many times and feel really dumb that I've never found it, but thank goodness he did and told us about it. And it looks like it could say Murfreesboro above it, or it could say Manny Farm, but he took the time to inscribe something in cursive in that brick above writing his own name and the date.
You know, back then, it wouldn't be unusual for a family to hide, for example, money or documents within the wall of their house.
Okay, let's not put that out there. We have some brand new cameras at Oakland's that are all over the grounds, and the police department is directly across the street. So,
what types of things, though, have been found over the years?
Absolutely nothing.
Nothing. Oh, well.
Bricks and nails.
Lots of pottery shards.
Looking back, I know you guys don't do renovations at Oakland, so.
We are, actually, right now.
Oakland's mansion itself.
We just got a grant from the Tennessee State Museum for $15,000, and we just finished work under the original section, the two-room cabin of the house. There had been a little slippage, and American Structural raised us a couple of inches, and we did some repair and plaster work repair. And when we did that, we opened up an early window that was a door that was enclosed into a window, which we call a ghost. Those are the ghosts that we have at Oakland's that we like to talk about, the ghosts of the original windows and doors and columns that have been changed. And so our downstairs bedroom or orientation room, as we use it today, has been replastered, repainted, and has this new ghost of a window and door that our guests can see. So there's always more to do at Oakland's. We're just applied for another grant from the Tennessee State Museum for next year to do more restoration, preservation work on the back wing of the mansion and the family dining room. We have an area there where we've got some plaster damage from downspout and moisture in the brick that we've been fighting for years. So it's always a preservation effort.
The winter kitchen.
And the winter kitchen underneath the back parlor, yes, we just built steps to the winter kitchen. I would hear guests ask our tour guides at the end of a tour, they would say, where's the kitchen? Because they didn't see any. And they said, well, we don't have any anymore. There have been four kitchens at Oakland, but we do actually still have two of them. Neither of them were interpreted. One is the only room in the mansion that guests never see, and it's post-Civil War. The Darrow family scooted a building up and pushed it to the exterior, the back exterior of the mansion, and made that into a modern kitchen for them. And we use it as an archive today for artifacts. And we will take guests back there so they can see the space if they like to. It's not anything that guests don't see, but they don't typically see it on a guided tour or a self-guided tour either. And then below the house is the winter kitchen, and that is absolutely fascinating. It was used for food preservation as well as cooking. Enslaved people would be down there living and just maintaining their lives during the first generation of the Mannies that built Oaklands. By the second generation, slave cabins were built, and enslaved people were less frequently inside the house, particularly living inside the house. They more likely lived in the cabins, and then the space was continued to be used as a workspace during the daytime. And so we have moved the heating and air conditioning units down there, added lighting, removed insulation. So you can see the whitewashing, the beautiful cut limestone walls down there that are whitewashed, fireplace remains that were later enclosed into what appears to be a brick oven. So there's lots more to learn there. Dr. Van West came and looked at it again with me a few weeks ago. I ran into him at Juneteenth, and he had some great ideas for us as we continue to learn better ways to interpret that space. And so now people get to see some space underneath the house, so, as well as inside.
I'm curious, under the house, that basement-like area, what was it, a dirt floor originally, or was it rock?
Apparently it was dirt. I'd like to think that it had a brick floor or something, but we can't find any evidence that there was one removed. In 1971, Oaklands dug it deeper to add heating and air to add central heating and air conditioning in 1971, and added ductwork. And so the original floor has been dug out, but not all the way around the room, just in the center. So you still can walk around the perimeter of the space and get a sense of the low ceilings that were there, and a presumably dirt floor, whitewashed stone walls, and then there was a servant's bell, so someone could be rung from above.
It's interesting. And then the slave cabins that were once, I guess, outside of Oakland's mansion, where did those stand?
15 to 18 of them, most likely. And that's probably where archaeologists will dig next when we have the resources to do that. They are at the back of the old ball fields on Highland, where it meets the Oak Park Medical Building, which is a green roof building that juts out into the wetlands at Oaklands. Just beside it is the archaeologically sensitive area that's been identified by the Corps of Engineers.
That's a pretty good ways away from the actual house.
Just opposite of the spring, which makes absolute sense. It gives that division between the main house and the enslaved, but still the equal access to the water source, which would have been so crucial.
Isn't it crazy how people used to live? I mean, mm-hmm. When you look back at history, it's just such a different time.
Yeah, they chose the best part of the property to grow produce on, and then they built the house near the spring and as close to town as possible.
And what were some of the larger crops that were grown out there at Oaklands?
Well, the cash crops were coming from their plantations in Mississippi, the cotton. They had three cotton plantations in Trio, Mississippi. The census records at Oaklands show us that it was primarily food production for the family, the enslaved, and the guests that would have been entertained there. They did do cotton and some tobacco, corn. They even grew rice down at the spring for a while. We have a jug which says, "Return when empty to be refilled with Monogram pure apple vinegar to Lewis Manny." And if that jug didn't exist, we wouldn't know that there was ever apple cider production there. So no telling what else was produced that we don't know, because we don't have journals and diaries and letters. We have census records to tell us that.
Was it the Manny family, or was it the Darrow family, that would hold big events there, or dinners, maybe with state representatives or lawmakers?
Well, the Mannies were much more politically and socially connected. Mm-hmm. Colonel Murphy, man, or suppose named for his daughter, Sally, inherited the property. She married Dr. James Manny, and then their son married the governor's daughter. Governor Newton Cannon was the first Whig governor of the state of Tennessee, and it was for his daughter and the Manny's son that the front of the mansion was built. The Darrows would have been a little more nouveau riche and new to Murfreesboro, and they had lots of large, elaborate parties at Oaklands, and that's eventually why they moved closer to town and built the house on East Main Street with the third floor ballroom.
You know, it's hard to picture, hard to imagine. Well, you know, if I make a move to a new town, I don't move to that town, then all of a sudden start holding parties. So Right. Everybody's way of thinking was a lot different back then, too.
Well, I'm sure they had to work to get into the social section of town.
What was the population then? Was it around 3,000 or was it less?
I don't know.
Small enough that they moved from Oaklands because they just felt they were too far out in the country. It was too far away from town for them.
And realistically, I guess if you're going down East Main Street, which is where they moved to, Manny Avenue would have been sort of their driveway all the way back. I mean, where did that actually start as their driveway when you come from East Main?
Well, for the Mannys, it started at Lytle Street. Mm-hmm. But for the Darrows, it started where it does today. The Mannys subdivided the front fields from Lytle to Robert Street and created Manny's Addition, the first subdivision in Murfreesboro. Everyone that bought a lot there got free and permanent access to the spring for their water source. So the Mannys had an incredibly long, impressive carriage path. The driveway that we have today is the length that it was when the Darrows would have moved there.
And then the Darrows, did they just leave Oakland's, you know, vacant when they moved to their new house?
No, they sold it to the Roberts family, and the Roberts had a very nice home there until they did the same as the Darrows. They also moved to East Main Street and built a more modern house, and it's at the corner of Manny Avenue and Robert Street. And the last time I looked, it was on the market for 1.5, which I think is a bargain.
So it's still for sale today.
Last time I looked.
It is fascinating, though, the history here locally in Rutherford County. And it is also fascinating the tie to North Carolina, you know, the Murfreesboro that is there. And I don't know that a lot of people realize that.
Yeah, they were very politically and socially connected family. They were an institute here. So.
There was more than just Colonel Murphy and the Mannys that were from North Carolina that moved out here at the same time, too.
Oh, certainly.
There was like a several groups of people that were from North Carolina that all came out.
Well, now there's also a Rutherford County in North Carolina, too. I wonder if there's any ties there.
Oh, certainly, yeah.
That's fascinating.
Well, a lot of it was given as land grants to soldiers in the Revolutionary War. And so I imagine a lot of the soldiers were from the same areas, and the ones that bought up the other ones' land grants that didn't want to move out here, other ones would buy up their land grants and collected them. And so I feel like with them all serving in from the same area and receiving their payments at the same time, that's probably why it was from that area that came.
Yeah, Oakland's was a land grant to Ezekiel White for service in the Revolutionary War, and he sold it to his commanding officer, Colonel Murphy. Murphy was a land speculator. He had over 40,000 acres at his death from buying so much land and had no will at the time of his death, so the state legislature divided his land holdings.
What we know is Oakland's mansion today, that was actually added on to or built, what year was it, 18?
Well, we can find them living there by the 1820 census. We can prove that the Mannys are there and have built something by 1820. We think that they built on in the 1830s, probably 18-teens was the initial construction, then an addition in the 20s and another in the 30s. And that would have been a federal-style home that was for Dr. Manny and his wife, Sally. And then at her death, the second generation, Lewis, when he married the governor's daughter, they built the massive addition, which doubled the size of the house, and it was designed in the Italian style.
And then you had the Civil War here in 1862 or so. So yeah. What did that look like for Oakland's mansion? Because I know you had a lot of officers who met there, and they even utilized the house, didn't they?
Yeah, the First Battle of Murfreesboro was fought in the front yard of Oakland's mansion on July 13th of 1862. There was over 30 soldiers killed on the front lawn of the mansion. Those that were wounded were brought into the mansion to be treated. The floors and the carpets were soaked in blood, according to the reports from the officers. Men that were killed were buried temporarily at the spring in a place that was chosen by Lewis Manny, although we don't know the exact location. The remains were moved. The Union soldiers were reinterred at Stones River National Battlefield. Confederates were moved multiple times, and they're across the street in Evergreen Cemetery in Confederate Circle, which, of course, was part of the plantation originally. But that took the Mannys out financially. They had invested so heavily in slave property that was in Mississippi, and that the Civil War fought on the grounds, destroyed fences, outbuildings, crops, animals. It was pretty much wiped out. And Dr. Manny filed a war claim with the federal government, but he didn't receive anything. So that's when they started subdividing the plantation.
Man, how does a battle end up in your front yard? How did that happen?
The 9th Michigan Regiment was camped at Oakland's that morning, and Nathan Bedford Forrest's men rode in to the courthouse, and Lewis Manny would have been held prisoner at the courthouse. The Confederates were freed, including Lewis. Then they came down to Oakland's and opened fire as they came down the drive. Colonel Duffield was wounded, shot twice, and he was revived, taken into the mansion where he signed a surrender of the city to the Confederacy. And he wrote back to the Mannys that though he lay wounded and a prisoner in their home, they were good to him, and he sent gifts back for years, inviting them to Detroit to see the billiard hall that he had built behind his house. He said that he wanted it to be known that at least one Union officer held in his heart high regard for a Confederate and his esteemed lady. And they really did build quite a friendship in the letters that survived.
That's really fascinating. And again, we're talking about Oakland's mansion here in Murfreesboro. And our guest today, James Manning, and also Jody Johnson with Oakland's Mansion. We're going to take a short break, and then we'll come right back and talk more about Oakland's and maybe more about the nighttime tours as well.
Broadcasting from the Middle Tennessee Electric Studios, MTE Sharing Change is funded by members who round up their electric bills to the nearest dollar each month as a donation and support hundreds of local nonprofits. Find out more at sharingchange.org.
Don't let concerns about today's events derail your long-term financial strategy. Hi, I'm Edward Jones Financial Advisor Lee Colvin, and I'm here to help. We can work together to understand the impact of these events and make sure that your goals are top of mind. While you can't control market volatility, we'll help focus on what you can control. We can connect in several virtual ways. Start by giving me a call at 615-907-7056. Edward Jones, member SIPC.
This is Peter Demas, and our family is inviting your family to come eat with us at Demas's restaurant. The salmon is my favorite, and then we have a variation that's on a regular menu for the salmon imperial that has some Alfredo, some crab, some shrimp on it. But the salmon is fresh, and we cut it fresh. But all of our fish, you can either get blackened, or you can get it with our regular seasoned salt. And either way you do it, it's just out of this world. I'm not a fish person, but I will eat it at Demas's all the time. Come eat with us at Demas's restaurant on Northwest Broad Street.
Talk Radio WGNS, putting the power of your free speech into action on air and online at WGNSradio.com. The Action Line on FM 101.9 and AM 1450 Murfreesboro, FM 100.5 Smyrna. Listen and watch at WGNSradio.com.
James Manning and Jody Johnson in studio with us this morning from Oakland's Mansion. And as I mentioned right before that break, that nighttime tour. If you want to take the tour at night of Oakland's Mansion and learn a little bit more about it, when again will that start and how do you go about doing that?
Just go to our website, oaklandsmansion.org. You just click the Book Now button on that page. You just go to our website and find the calendar of events. Go to Night Tours, or you can find us on Facebook too. But it is Thursday, October the 24th, and we're going to do a tour at 7 o'clock. Then Connor's going to do another one at 8, another one at 9. So after your tour, you can have light refreshments and hors d'oeuvres on the back porch of the mansion, and then you can see and sit in the herb garden and enjoy those, walk down to the spring with your flashlight, and enjoy being at Oakland's in the evening.
You know, as you started talking about all the deaths that occurred on the front lawn alone of Oakland's Mansion, it kind of makes you think, I mean, there was a lot of dark days at Oakland's.
Right.
There were, absolutely.
Yeah, not just the soldiers, but there were a lot of children who didn't survive to adulthood that were born at Oakland's as well. So, with yeah. Both Sally and Adeline, both had eight, yeah. But lost several of them.
Man, it
so
was
four of her eight within 1 year.
Yeah.
And then, of course, she was she the one who was married? Her husband was a doctor?
Mm-hmm. That's right.
And was he the one who would do the births, or would they have another doctor come in?
We don't have any surviving record of that. It's a good question. Mm-hmm. But there's very little evidence of Dr. Manning's medical practice. Medical practice is probably fairly insignificant. It was the plantation management that would have occupied the vast majority of his time. Matter of fact, when Colonel Duffield writes back to thank this doctors, plural, who cared for him, but he doesn't say who they were, and he doesn't say it's Dr. Manning. Dr. Manning was retired by that point. We have a small medical collection, thanks primarily to Dr. E.C. Tolbert, but we do have a small doctor's office and medical collection in the mansion to represent what a medical practice of that period would have looked like. And Dr. Manning was a founding member of the Tennessee Medical Association. It met at Oakland's and was founded there.
But it sounds like his main concern was the plantation itself.
Oh, certainly, yeah. The plantation management here and the ones in Mississippi.
He also seemed to be pretty philanthropy. Also seemed to be a passion. There was a lot of...
He was very involved in education.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That and, well, in buying businesses and selling businesses and things. So they had their hands in a lot of
had a dry goods store
pockets.
On the square and mm-hmm. papers.
And then their travels... back to North Carolina as an example. I mean, this is, you know, today would be a 6-7 hour drive, but back then, how did they go about doing that? I mean, how long would that take?
I don't know. It would have been miserable the entire journey.
It would have been. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're talking about going over a mountain range as well. I mean, it's not an easy journey, especially if it were by horse.
Yeah. I mean, you traveled somewhere, you stayed for long periods of time.
That would be rough.
Certainly, yeah.
I mean, how do you maintain a plantation while traveling, which is going to take you a month to get there and get back, if not longer?
They also, some of the family I've seen that they would travel to the Mississippi as well. And so they would at least go to the Mississippi places once a year and check on them and come back as well. So they did a lot of travel,
they did, even though
it was hard to do.
Yeah. Did you mention Michigan was another place they went to?
They were invited. We don't have any evidence they ever accepted, but Colonel Duffield wanted them to see the billiard hall that he had built behind his house in Detroit. And he invited them many times. He gave them very specific routes that he wanted them to take. Those letters to the Mannies survive, but we don't have, of course, the letters that they wrote to him.
So when you are wealthy in the South, or maybe you're in the North, maybe you're in the West, wherever it is, word gets around pretty quick as to who's who out there in the U.S. At least it did back then, it sounds like, even though there was no internet or any way to figure this stuff out.
Yeah, they would have had lots of wealthy people traveling through the area that would have wanted to stay with them, because this is a time when there weren't hotels in the area, and they had a large house with two large guest rooms that were designed as a focal point of that 1858 edition. They had a changing and bathing room upstairs before plumbing existed. And so you would want to be a guest of the Mannies in one of their fine rooms. And if you weren't a friend of the family, you would have been passing through town. If you were in that social set, you would have likely been allowed to stay there.
So during those days when it was hot outside, it was really hot inside the house too, I would say.
Certainly, yeah. But the walls are 3 bricks thick, so it takes a while for it to heat up. So it cools down at night and keeps that cool air with all the windows and doors would have been open, of course, at the time. And the house was designed with cross ventilation in mind, and they would have moved the furniture quite frequently, not been stagnant like we were. They would have put it by the windows and gotten the windows open and that breeze flowing through. And on the hottest nights, I'm sure they would have slipped downstairs.
So were there any records kept about, let's say, for example, crimes or anything like that that may have occurred, break-ins at the house? I mean, does stuff like that occur back then, at a house as stately as Oakland's mansion?
Well, nothing like that comes to mind. The Civil War, during the Civil War skirmish on the grounds, Adeline was said to have kept the soldiers at bay at the back door with a pistol because she had a sick child in the house and wouldn't let them in. And we can imagine that probably was the case, but there are, unfortunately, just a very little diary, journals, and letters of any description the Mannies left behind for us. So they left us lots of mysteries.
You know, it's total contrast today as to how families, you know, operate, if you would, day to day. I mean, so many, you've got teenagers who post everything on social media. Mm-hmm. You've got parents who write about stuff on social media. There's just so much record for today, but so little way back then.
Well, one of the Roberts girls that lived there in the 20s kept a scrapbook, which we just received. And it's hundreds of pages of information about what went on in Oakland in the 19 and photographs of what went on in the night from 25 to 31, roughly. And that's been very insightful. So things like that still can surface from earlier periods when the Mannies were there. To date, we still have no photograph of the house during their period. And practically no firsthand letters or journals or diaries or things of that description. We have the Mannie Family Bible, and we have Adeline's music book, but there's just not much information there.
So maybe one day more stuff will pop up.
I certainly hope so.
And then in the attic of Oakland's mansion, has anything been located there over the years?
I don't think there's anything left. And, you know, the house has, you mentioned, being built in phases, so it has multiple attic systems and multiple foundation systems. I think they've been all pretty well explored as far as I can tell. But there's always mystery, so perhaps.
And again, for those listening, if anybody would like to get involved in any of the events happening at Oakland's Mansion, tell us again the date, for example, the crafts event and then the beer festival.
Yeah, the Fall Craft Fair is September 7th, next Saturday. So it's coming up pretty soon. And it's free for guests. The first 100 guests will receive a little goodie bag that'll have a few samples and information about the people who will be in the fair. The fair will also have a little scavenger hunt with that you can complete and put in an entry for a door prize. And so there'll be things to find and scattered around the booths at the fair, as well as the community outreach area with lots of stuff to explore. Friends of Lineball will be there with some books, as well as Lineball Library to sign up people for library cards. We'll also have a Discovery Center and Earth Experience will have booths and letting you know about their museums. So it's going to be really exciting and fun. We can't wait to have our first one, and hopefully many more to follow.
You know, I just thought of another question about Oakland's. Was there a library room at Oakland's way back then?
There still is today as well. It's the other
library, the gentleman's parlor. Yeah, the parlor on the right, we believe, was the gentleman's parlor that served as the library, and it has one of the original bookcases. Unfortunately, the one is missing. I think we have number two is written on the back, but it's one of the finest pieces in the house. Is built of walnut and extremely intricately faux grained to rosewood, and it's a Gothic Revival piece. It's really quite impressive. If you're into furniture, we've got a lot of pretty pieces.
It's full of lots of old books too. Some of them even date back to Colonel Murphy. They were some of the books that are in that book were from Colonel Murphy, as well as we have some of Dr. Manny's medical books and things that are there.
It's got to be fascinating to look back at those old medical books and what they talk about and then comparing it to today. I mean, it's got to be quite different.
Yeah, and some of their titles are quite shocking to some of our guests, too, if they read closely the spines and the bookcases.
It is interesting, though, to take a step back into history and to try to learn about what life was like way back then. Mm-hmm. Are there any hidden rooms in Oakland's mansion?
We haven't found any.
They're pretty hidden, though.
The fact that the space underneath the house served as a winter kitchen, and it was more than just a basement or a crawl space, has been a revelation to some, and those are often overlooked spaces underneath the house. So that's the only room.
And again, Oakland's Mansion right here in Murfreesboro. What is the website for people to learn more?
It's oaklandsmansion.org, and then just go at the top and find our news and events. And we are also, I wanted to point out, we talked about night tours that are on Thursday, October 24th. We are working with Mercer Little Theater, and we may add another nighttime event close to that one, because this one is so small that we expect it to sell out. So there may be a possibility of opening one up that's a little bit larger for more people to attend. We also expect to sell Oktoberfest out as well. So you should definitely get online and get your tickets soon.
That sounds great. And again, the website once more?
Oaklandsmansion.org.
Perfect. And again, with us this morning, James Manning and Jody Johnson from Oakland's Mansion. And as we close this morning, I guess, what is the main thing you'd like folks to remember?
Oh, wow. Put me on the spot. Well, I want people that are here listening, they're probably residents more than they are visitors, I suspect. But a lot of residents tell us they've lived here 20 or 30 years and they've never been to Oaklands. That's why we put on these events, is to encourage you to get out and experience it. It's more than just a house full of old furniture and things. It's really a vibrant place. We want to tell you a lot more about it than what we're talking about today. And we want you to experience the place in different ways. And whether it's one of our vintage baseball games that we have in the summertime, or coming to a play or a concert on the front lawn, whether you take a tour of the mansion or not, there's so many different ways to explore it. And we are bringing back the candlelight tour of homes this year and our Christmas parties. So it's not even too early to talk about Christmas.
Sounds great. Well, thank you both for joining us.
Thank you, Scott.
Right now, that time, 8:58. Stay with us. We do have local news coming your way next on WGNS, and also a check on the traffic and the weather. That's what comes your way right now. Stay with us.
The Action Line on FM 101.9 and AM 1450 Murfreesboro, FM 100.5 Smyrna. Listen and watch at WGNSradio.com.